Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is December 12th, 2013. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, it's the holiday season. We love the holiday seasons at Soleri. And of course, we have our holiday card up on the blog. It's Santa in a spacecraft with a reindeer pulling it. Check it out. We've listed our donations. We take a lot of time and really choose out some of our favorite charities to give to at the end of the year. So check them out. It's up on the blog. And we also have Give the Gift. It's our way of extending your budget at Christmas. If you're a Soleri subscriber, we want to give a 2 months complimentary subscription to the person of your choice. So let us know at customer service how we can provide a complimentary subscription to the person of your choice. Check it out on the blog, Gift of Soleri. Our theme tonight is Waiting for the Financial Godot. It's based on Samuel Beckett's play, Waiting for Godot, in which the two characters wait throughout and in vain through the whole play for someone named Godot. And I posted a commentary up on the blog this week, and I said that life in the financial markets increasingly feels like Beckett's masterpiece, where everybody's waiting for Godot. Some people are waiting for the U.S. budget and the Federal Reserve and QE, and so sort of hanging on the pro-centralization team. And that's not good, because, in fact, if you look at those people who are getting something done, they're ignoring Washington and the pro-centralization proceeding. I know it's difficult, since that team has such a great way of coming around and harvesting the value that we create. But I pointed out that the most important message, I think, of 2013 was that guns won. The effort to strip the American people of the right of self-defense didn't work. So it shows you what happens when we turtle forward. I got a wonderful comment from a subscriber who, upon reading the commentary, wrote, let me read it. I nearly reached another one of those times today. I was going to ask you if collapse is gaining a stronger likelihood. All the sources keep pressing it. A wonderful Austin caregiver I know works diligently fearing imminent collapse for at least the last 3 years that I've known the person. I read your new article, and processing in that shift, I write my friend and shared perhaps some synopsis of the likely control we live with and refer to your new article. I think I better take your article to heart myself. Otherwise, collapse will occur every day after tomorrow until I die. And sure enough, it's not unlike waiting for the Fed or waiting for the budget. We keep waiting for some form of normalcy to come back. And in fact, collapse, if you listen to the different articles as to why people think it's going to collapse, is because they're hoping for a return to normalcy. And in fact, if you understand the financial repression that's upon us as part of the slow burn, even you could call it financial invasion, very much part of the ongoing digital invasion of our lives. What you need to know is, don't wait for the financial Godot. We need to proceed to build a future without the benefit of that normalcy returning. I hope it does, but don't bet the ranch. Money and markets, the financial markets, really ground down, not in a big way this week. It was a sideways correction with a continuing down. The equity markets corrected. Bond prices falling because interest rates are rising. You know, we're going to be doing a big presentation on the fixed income markets in the equity overview in January. Chuck Gibson and I have agreed that we're going to go to work on bonds. I'm very glad about that, because the bond market is the dog wagging the tail and the equity markets is the tail. So we need to talk about what's next for bonds, and I hope you join us for that in January. IPOs continued. Hilton came out with the biggest IPO, largest hotel IPO to date. So the IPO market continues. Precious metals got a little bit of bounce at the beginning of the week, but didn't look good today. IAM Gold canceled its dividend. That's not good for that market and the miners, because IAM Gold was known as the miner with a low-cost structure that could produce an attractive dividend. So if they suspend their dividend, It shows you tough times ahead. Now, I thought we'd get a bounce in the equity markets on the announcement of a U.S. budget deal. We have Paul Ryan and Patty Murray coming out, negotiating for both sides, coming out with a proposal for the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2013, essentially a two-year budget deal. In some respects, that's very good news. The summary link is up on the blog. Check it out. There's several characteristics of this deal. One is that it's very modest. And what's frightening is if you look at what they had to do to get a modest deal, it makes you wonder what's going to happen when they have to get something significant. Clearly, the message to Congress from both the bottom constituencies and the grassroots and from Mr. Global is figure it out, get it done. It's clear Mr. Global doesn't want to lose control. And the danger is if they have more messy government shutdowns, et cetera, you're going to start to see a lot of people bottom up start to realize, you know, we can control these cash flows. We don't have to keep running this money through the central mechanism. This deal is not done yet. You know, it still has to be approved, and it's not a slam dunk from here to there, although I think Mr. Global, again, does not want any mess. We continue to publish different aspects of the Fiscal Cliff article. That article is as relevant today as it was last Christmas time when I wrote it, and I really encourage you, if you want to understand the deeper story in the budget, to check it out. The most chilling part of the budget deal is Willie Horton once said he robbed banks because that's where the money is. In that same vein, what we're watching is the pension funds and retirement arrangements really used as a source of funding for all sorts of stuff across the board, both through the front door and the back door. But in the U.S. budget deal, it would require increased contributions to government and military pension funds, and that those increased contributions would be booked as revenues to balance the budget. And of course, the money would go out in spending. It would not be reserved. Those are not funded. You know, you don't have assets escrowed to back those promises. So the increased revenues into the retirement funds would be spent on current spending, while the same amount would be reflected as future liabilities of the government. This is one of the countless reminders of the old maxim that possession is 9/10 of the law, because what we're seeing in pension funds around the country, Detroit, the latest example, if the assets are gone, the promises could get gone too. Behind the scenes, one of the things you don't see, although it shows up in the performance in the industrial sector and the aerospace sector in the stock market, is the military-industrial complex is working on a quiet revolution on how they operate. They're going from the cost-plus model that they've been on for many decades to something I believe far more productive. So I think what's going on in the industrial sector in the stock market is not just spin. It's a quiet revolution, but it's profound. One window into part of the federal budget came to the fore this week when we were informed by the cleaners 10 miles away that they're going to close down. We're going to have to drive 45 minutes to do a cleaner near where I get my groceries. And what's the reason? They can't find help. They can't find anybody who's willing to work in the cleaning establishment. And I suspect it's also related to the fact that if you look at the increased load that all the rules and regulations are putting on payrolls, it's also getting very expensive, and so they can't afford to pay what it takes to draw. What was important to understand about that story is if you look at the checks that come in into this area for disability welfare and unemployment and food stamps or the digital cards, it's absolutely unbelievable. And we're watching the small business infrastructure literally choke on absence of labor, and yet the federal government is funding enormous amounts of living expenses and overhead here in counties all across America. So if you look at one of the big tensions in the federal budget, it's how you're going to keep those cash flows coming. State and local pension funds continue to experience troubles. There's a very interesting press release from CalPERS on the Detroit bankruptcy, and some comments from the LA Times that I put up on the blog. We see Treasury selling its final tranche of General Motors stock, saying it now lost $10.5 billion on the GM bailouts, but net on the total bailouts has made a profit. I so profoundly disagree with their accounting treatment of all of this that it's so profound and the situation is so ridiculous. I've decided I'm not going to spend any more time talking about it or delving into it. The reality is that when you give the bankers $27 trillion, it's very hard to turn around and say you made a profit on it. Although, you know, we could debate this till the cows come home, but to me, it's all yeah. The Volcker Rule has been approved. That rule has been working through the financial regulators since it was passed as part of the Dodd-Frank bill in 2010. One of the questions from subscribers, what are the real implications of the Volcker Rule and what are the obvious directions that the banks are going to take to sidestep their supposed inability? The Volcker Rule does bring in stricter limits on proprietary trading. Essentially, the idea is you shouldn't be able to borrow money using the federal credit and then turn around and put it into high-risk trading that causes your bank to be at risk and to put the federal credit at more risk. Wall Street's, I think, been adjusting and getting ready for this since the legislation was passed. You saw after the legislation was passed, many, many proprietary trading functions cut back or closed. If you watch Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan stock this week relative to the markets, it seems to me that there's not much of an impact. I think the big banks still have plenty of ways to do proprietary trading offshore, but technically it does protect somewhat against the federal credit. But as long as they're solvent, it's generally difficult to stop completely. If anything, what you've done is you've created a much more complicated situation for all the financial institutions. On one hand, you're giving them tons of federal credit, which is, you know, a little bit like giving them financial candy and heroin, and then saying, okay, now we need to regulate you more carefully so that you don't party too much. And I think there's much simpler ways of dealing with the situation, like not giving them the federal credit. But that's a topic for a whole nother day. A lot of the high risk things they're doing, as far as I'm concerned, were part of a national security plan, one way or the other. They were either doing them with the federal credit as agent for the Exchange Stabilization Fund, or that it was part of engineering the financial coup d'état. The Fed has cleaned up a lot of the fraudulent paper with the QEs, and that means there's a lot less systemic risk in the financial system. There's still plenty, but there's a lot less. The coup is over. Now the big issue is how do you cut the excess capacity in the financial system? Because as long as there's a federal credit arbitrage and you're giving people federal credit, they're going to want to turn around and make money on it because it's kind of a rigged deal. And that's one of the reasons I say the statement that they made money on TARP is, and the bailouts is, you know, I strongly disagree. The excess capacity issue is why I've said the bail-ins are coming, and sure enough, we have the Bank of England and a variety of other players in Europe saying bail-ins are coming. So what exactly that means, we still don't know. Of course, what it does mean is that the losses hit the depositors instead of the taxpayers, as happens in bailouts. I think it depends on how much is involved in the bail-ins, how quickly. But certainly there's a lot of excess capacity to cut both in Europe and here, and it's coming. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, God bless WikiLeaks, they dumped out a second release of Trans-Pacific Partnership agreement documents. What you can see is their deep divisions as America keeps pushing and forcing things that give it centralized control around the world. Issues like genetically modified organisms, and that's up on the blog. One of the most fascinating stories of 2013 and one that will be ongoing into 2014 is the Vatican reengineering. This is radical. It's impossible to understand exactly what's happening, but the fact that we're looking at the greatest money laundering network ever created is being opened up to transparency, and the Pope is insisting he's trying to cut the flow through the Vatican Bank. You kind of wonder exactly where the flow will go through now and what this is all about. Time magazine has made Pope Francis Man of the Year, so check it out on the blog. There's a couple of very interesting stories. Trojan horses. One of the most frustrating things about being Catherine Austin Fitz is you see lots of wonderful people get way excited about wonderful ideas that you know are Trojan horses and are simply going to result in radical increases of control and financial repression. And let me mention two of them, because two of them are looking to move to full blossom. One, about the worst idea in the world, is lots of stories this week around the alternative media about Iceland coming up with a new constitution built through crowdfunding. It could be a great idea in Iceland. The idea of anybody opening up the constitution in the United States is the most terrifying thing in the world. If you think the powers that be cannot hijack the process, you are dead wrong. They can and they will, and don't for a minute think that, you know, the various groups pushing a new constitution, including by this method, aren't one way or another mind controlled or funded or encouraged, many times innocently without their realizing it by this effort. So if anybody suggests to you we ought to have a new constitution in America and we ought to do it with crowdfunding, tell them no. Second thing is the Royal Mint is now in talks to create a gold-backed Bitcoin. A wonderful piece from Gonzo Lira up on the blog earlier this week. It's called Bitcoin's a Fully Compliant Currency the Government Can Love. What it explains is why Bitcoin's really is the way into a global digital currency that will give government unbelievable and invasive control. And, of course, government only a tool to the powers that be that behind it. So Bitcoin's is, I believe, one way or another, brought to you by Mr. Global. We'll be talking about it more on the Solari Report in 2014. But check out, we put a commentary up on the blog this week with links to the various stories about the interests of a gold-backed Bitcoin and where that stands. But I assure you it's going to give Mr. Global two things he's always wanted. Now that he's stolen everything, he can introduce sound currency, which helps him keep it. And the other is every, unlike gold coins, which give enormous privacy and freedom and really do support financial freedom, this one is completely invasive, and it's as bad for the average guy. A gold-backed Bitcoin is going to be about the most financially repressive thing going. Space, the final frontier. We had a wonderful summit here in Hickory Valley with the Solari team yesterday, and one of the things we talked about was having a quarterly space report, because I think space is going to be so important to the investment scene going forward. But if ever there was two examples of the importance of space, NASA announced it's going to grow a garden on the moon. Can you imagine that? Apparently, there are no food safety rules on the moon, so let's see what happens. I also pulled out the Wall Street Journal, a big fancy glossy in the middle of the Wall Street Journal this last Saturday, with lots of ads for Christmas presents and a two-page ad for the new lunar moon watch from Chanel. I said, oh, now that the model has of space investment has been privatized, here we go. Our hero this week is Cort Skinner. Cort Skinner is the president of the board of Greater Montessori Creative Learning Center in East Palo Alto. It's one of our donations this year. He was the founder and chair of the one of our donations last year, Computers for Everyone, wonderful not-for-profit in Menlo Park, California, that makes takes secondhand and parts and donations and does a lot to make technology accessible to everybody in that community. It's a wonderful thing. This year we asked our wonderful cartoonist Bob Parsons to make a tune for some of the leadership that inspired our donations. And so we're going to have a picture and a little description of Cort up on the blog. He's one of my favorite people in the world. His grandson Keegan says Cort Skinner is the smartest man in America, and that's very easily possibly true. He's certainly one of the smartest human beings I've ever known, but smart not just in terms of unbelievable intellect. He had a very successful career in Silicon Valley, but also wise in the ways of the world and adds more value per hour and square foot than just about any human being I've ever met. So, Cort Skinner, thank you for all that you do, and we hope our donation to Greater Montessori helps and inspires other donations. It's a wonderful, wonderful organization, well worth your support. Ask Catherine, we had great questions for Jim Norman this week, who we did the interview with, and so I'm not going to address those. We were able to get Jim to cogitate with us on all of the questions you asked, so check out the interview. Another question is, am I going to do a lunch in the Palm Springs area? On my next trip to California this spring, I will drive through Palm Springs either on the way out or back, and you know, that's a great idea. I think we will look into doing a lunch in that area because everybody from LA can come over if they'd like. Another question, dear Catherine, in your opinion, was John F. Kennedy Jr. Intentionally killed when his plane went down, or was it an accident? If he was intentionally killed, why did powerful people suddenly want him dead? He's talking about the president's son. I believe the odds were quite high that he was assassinated. There are various theories on why it happened. One was that he was going to run for the Senate at the same time Hillary Clinton was planning on run. And given sort of his background and abilities, he had a very good chance of winning. There are other people who either wanted that seat, Clinton being one of them, or who wanted Clinton to have it. That's one of the theories. Also, the theory was, of course, he was the publisher of George magazine. One of the stories was he was going to publish the story of what really happened, the true story in and around his father's assassination. And then another theory was that the people who killed his father their kids could make their bones killing the son. That sounds a little far-fetched to many people, but I assure you it's a lot less far-fetched than you might think. Anyway, those are some of the theories. I have no idea what the truth is. I think the chances, for a variety of reasons, including those that he was assassinated, are very, very good. Our interview, great interview with Jim Norman. He's one of my favorite people to talk about. One of the things he describes is that there is an extraordinary and deep conviction on this planet to remain with fossil fuel. It's very strong. I put this story up on the blog today, Exxon announcing that natural gas will be 25% of the energy supply globally within the not too distant future. It's a very important story and one to take seriously. And so Jim, I think, does a very good job of describing why that's so. And we went through many of the different areas, both what's going on in fossil fuel, the controversy around fracking and why it will probably come out in favor of fracking, the use of renewable energy and it's the fact that it's growing and where it stands. I mentioned a little bit about breakthrough energy, but that's a long way off to get that adapted. Anyway, it was a very interesting interview, and I would encourage you to listen to it. We did take an hour and a half, so we did go for quite a bit. But if you look at the importance of energy to what's about to happen or what's happening in North America, I can't stress it enough. As Jim said, the cost of manufacturing in North America is 40 to 50% energy. So this is an energy story. And one of the things Jim does a great job of explaining is why North America has such a tremendous advantage. If you haven't read his Oil Card, I know I keep pounding this pavement. If you have not read his book, Oil Card, as far as I'm concerned, it is the best book on the energy markets I've ever read, and a very solid explanation from a very seasoned reporter with deep roots in this industry as to how that market works. And I think he's nailed it. So it's been out for more than a couple of years, but it's as relevant today as it ever was. Get it if you can, The Oil Card. Let's go to the movies. I had said I wanted to do The Warning, which is a PBS documentary about the efforts of Brooks Lieborn to regulate derivatives during the Clinton administration. But then I saw Netflix documentary done by Bloomberg Businessweek, Hank, 5 years from the brink, whereas former Secretary of the Treasury Hank Paulson tries to justify the bailouts. And Lord, it's painful to watch. These are both stories told from the point of view of the official story. The Warning is useful in the sense that it describes a very solid, very capable, very well-connected, credible player trying to do something about derivatives, which was very much within her scope, and being slammed by Greenspan, Summers, and Rubin in a way that is frightening and literally being pushed out of government. And so it shows you the importance of derivatives to those players and leaving derivatives sort of unattended in the shadow markets. And you can see it very clearly. What you don't see is anything about why that is so. So you don't get an overview of the real reengineering of the financial system and the sort of the governance on planet Earth. It doesn't take you into the deeper story, but it does do a good job of showing the importance of derivatives to doing so. Hank, 5 years from the brink, is very painful to watch. Whereas Hank Paulson basically defends and promotes the official reality. One of our subscribers wrote in and says, I hope you point out that his position allowed him to sell his Goldman stocks before the crash without paying any taxes. Yes, that is the case. I think he wouldn't have come unless he could have done that. I don't think that's the reason he became Secretary of the Treasury. But there's no doubt about it. Hank Paulson played the patsy on that part of the story. And anyway, but you will get some of the official story by watching it. It's exceptionally painful. And what you're watching is almost a story of massive disassociation of the official reality from what was really going on. And yet, I will tell you, if you're in that spot and you don't appreciate what is really going on when the music stops, you can understand how he got cornered and rolled, so to speak. Well, those two documentaries, if you want to revisit that period and get more into the official story, again, they don't tell you the deeper story. If you want to understand the deeper story, read my blog post, Financial Coup d'Etat. One of the things I'm reminded when I saw these documentaries is the extent to which during that period, people like Bourne or someone like me or various folks trying to do something about what they were seeing were struggling within their immediate sector. They didn't see the bigger picture. And in the blog post, Financial Coup d'Etat, I talk about being in London with a reporter who had seen what had happened in Russia and another reporter had seen what had happened in East Europe. And I, who had seen what had happened domestically in North America, and we all gave our presentations only to realize in horror that we had each been dealing with one leg of the elephant, but in fact, there was an elephant in the room. And we had the same firms, the same law firms, the same investment banks, the same sovereign governments operating globally in literally a financial coup d'etat. And it was a magical moment, because what we all realized was that each one of us in our own sector had been dealing with a global movement that was clearly amazingly coordinated. They knew what they were doing. And that's, of course, why I always try and get you guys to listen to the and watch the Sir James Goldsmith video, or read my online book, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, because, in fact, it was a plan and they knew. And if you watch Rubin and Greenspan and Summers sit down and basically drive born out of government, of course, they were privy to the larger plan. Well, that's it for this evening. In closing, coming up next week, Winter Wellness with Dr. Laura Thompson. We're coming into that season where all sorts of stuff goes on. You get colds, you get flus, we have severe weather and less sun. Some people get the winter blues. So we wanted to talk about what are all the things you can do to really make sure you sail through and have a healthy and joyous winter. So Winter Wellness with Dr. Laura Thompson. December 26th, day after Christmas, we'll be posting John Rappaport's new report. And then the big one, January 2nd, I'll be doing the year-end wrap-up. We love to get your thoughts and comments. We'll be publishing a commentary that will be up next week, where we're collecting all the best wrap-ups from around the web. Please feel free to post your recommendations or comments, because I want to make sure I do a great job of sort of telling you where we've been in 2013 and where we're headed in 2014. With that wrap-up, we'll be publishing our big poster of the year. In 2013, it was Coming Clean, so we'll be announcing the 2014 poster and have it up on the blog. So until next week, December 19th, with Dr. Laura Thompson, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.